Hello, it's Monday the 18th of October and welcome to a new week here on Korea 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. Gyeonggi Province Governor and the ruling party's presidential candidate Lee Jae-myung faced intense questioning from lawmakers during a parliamentary audit over allegations of corruption. We'll have more in our news briefing shortly. South Korea has recorded the lowest daily COVID-19 count since July. We'll speak to a doctor from the KDCA over the pandemic situation and what lies ahead for our in-depth today. And Tottenham Hotspur star forward Son Heung-min overcame a COVID-19 scare with a goal on Sunday. We'll have the latest on Monday's sports roundup. We'll have all that and more on today's Korea 24. A parliamentary audit on the Gyeonggi provincial government began on Monday with Governor Lee Jae-myung, the ruling Democratic Party's presidential candidate, in attendance. As expected, it was a fiery affair with opposition lawmakers suggesting Lee's involvement in corruption allegations and Lee batting them away, making allegations against opposition figures himself. For more on the parliamentary audit session and the rest of the day's headlines, we have once again in the studio with us editor Bryce Ogg. Hello, Bryce.
Yeah, thank you for the warm welcome.
So can you tell us some more about the audit session today?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's right. The main opposition People Power Party claimed that Lee is the one who orchestrated the Seongnam Land Development Project, which is currently embroiled in corruption allegations. The PPP also suspected a connection between former Supreme Court Justice Kwon Soon-il, who served as a legal advisor to an asset management firm at the center of the scandal, and the top court acquitting Lee of election violation.
Right, so it appears a lot of attention is being focused on Lee and his allies, but he didn't take it lying down, did he?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Others are also being criticized. Lee, for his part, said those in possession of stolen property are the real culprits, referring to the son of PPP-turned-independent representative Kwak Sang-do, who received 5 billion won in severance from the asset management firm. The governor also denied having a close relationship with Yoo Dong-gyu, the former acting chief of Seongnam Development Corporation, who has been arrested for his alleged role in the scandal.
Meanwhile, a key figure in the land development scandal has been arrested as he returned home from the United States on Monday morning. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, so lawyer Nam Wook, who left for the U.S. in mid-September before the investigation into the land development scandal began, arrived at 5 a.m. at Incheon International Airport. And Nam was arrested upon arrival and transported to the Seoul Central District Prosecutor's Office. So Nam is one of four key figures in the massive construction project in Seongnam, including Kim Man-bae, the largest shareholder of Hwacheon Daeju Asset Management, and Yoo Dong-gyu, the former acting president of Seongnam Development Corporation, which holds a majority stake in the project. The lawyer allegedly played a key role and reportedly earned about 100.7 billion won through his company, with an investment of 87.21 million won. The prosecution plans to request an arrest warrant after questioning him. In a recent media interview, Nam denied his involvement in any irregularities, laying blame on Kim and Yoo.
And there have been even more developments related to the Seongnam development scandal. What else has been going on?
Yeah, so that's right. Prosecutors investigating political favor allegations surrounding this development raided Seongnam City Hall a second time on Monday morning. The Seoul Central District Prosecutor's Office sent investigators to seize materials related to the project, just 3 days after its initial raid. During Friday's search, prosecutors requested emails from the city office's information and communication department and are said to have secured those materials on Monday. Prosecutors on Friday seized documents related to approvals and permits for the project from the city's housing and culture departments. They also seized materials related to a development project in Wirie. With the confiscated material, prosecutors plan to find out whether any favoritism or lobbying efforts were carried out in pursuing the Daejang-dong and Wirie projects.
Let's turn to other headlines now. Let's turn to the COVID-19 situation specifically. As more and more people receive their second vaccination, some are becoming worried about when a booster shot will become available. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, I know. I'm waiting for it myself. So President Moon Jae-in urged officials to swiftly draw up a booster vaccination plan for those who have been inoculated with the Johnson vaccine because its efficacy has been found to drastically decline over time. Moon made the call at a meeting with his aides on Monday, following a recommendation by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's advisory panel that booster shots be approved for the Johnson vaccine. According to a study posted on the MedArchive website, vaccine efficacy among 620,000 discharged U.S. service members who were fully vaccinated with one Johnson shot plunged from 88% in March to 33% in August.
Yes, in South Korea, around 1.46 million people, mostly members of reserve forces and civil defense forces, aged between 30 and 59, received the Johnson & Johnson's Janssen vaccine since June. Meanwhile, the president also called for preparations in patient transfers and outpatient treatment, as at-home treatment is expected to surge amid a transition into the with COVID-19 system. With all that in mind, let's take a look at the latest COVID-19 case count. What were the numbers on Monday?
So there's some good news. Daily coronavirus cases fell to the low 1,000 range on Monday, the smallest figure since the fourth wave of the pandemic started in July. According to the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency, 1,050 new COVID-19 cases were detected throughout Sunday, raising the accumulated caseload to 343,445. The daily tally dropped by 370 from the previous day and remained below 2,000 for the 10th consecutive day. The figure has been over 1,000 since July 7th, when it marked 1,211. Of the new cases, 1,030 were local transmissions, while 20 were from overseas. The capital region accounted for 77.1% of local cases, reporting 794 cases. Non-capital areas added 236 cases.
So we keep hearing about this transition to living with a COVID-19 phase. Is that around the corner yet, do we know?
So yeah, well, the country will remain under the current social distancing scheme for another 2 weeks to the end of the month, starting Monday, with some adjustments. The guidelines will be the last before the nation begins a gradual shift to the so-called living with COVID-19 phase. According to the government, Seoul, Incheon, and the surrounding Gyeonggi-do province will remain under level 4, the highest in the country's social distancing system, while non-capital areas will stay under level 3 until October 31st. Starting Monday, up to 8 people can gather in areas under level 4, including 4 fully vaccinated people, regardless of whether it is before or after 6 p.m. Under level 3, up to 10 people, including 6 fully vaccinated people, can gather for private meetings. Also, the closing time for restaurants and cafes in these areas has been extended by 2 hours to 12 a.m.
Yes, I understand the government will also allow study rooms, study cafes, and concert halls and movie theaters to operate until midnight in areas under level 4.
That's
as
right.
Well. Let's continue on now to other headlines. The Carbon Neutrality Committee convened on Monday to reduce the harmful effects of global warming. What more can you tell us?
So the Carbon Neutrality Committee held a plenary meeting Monday and finalized 2 scenarios to achieve zero net emissions by 2050. The first is to abolish fossil fuels by that year, with the other to scrap coal but keep liquefied natural gas. Accordingly, industrial emissions must be reduced by 80% from 2018 levels, while the transport sector must expand electric and hydrogen cars by more than 85%. The committee also decided to raise the greenhouse gas reduction goal, known as the nationally determined contribution, to 40% by 2030. To reach this goal, renewable energy must increase to 30.2% of the energy mix from the current 6.2%. The decisions will be made final during a cabinet meeting next week. President Moon Jae-in is expected to officially declare South Korea's goals at the COP26 UN Climate Change Conference, scheduled for next month in the UK.
And finally, since our last show, President Moon and Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida were reported to have spoken on the phone on Friday for the very first time. But just as there might have been any hint of improving relations between the two countries, there's been another incident that has upset Seoul. Can you tell us more?
Right. So the South Korean government recently expressed a deep disappointment over the ritual offering and visit by Japanese leaders to the controversial Yasukuni Shrine. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida sent a masakaki tree to the shrine on Sunday to mark a 2-day autumn festival. Additionally, former Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga earlier the same day visited the shrine, which honors Japan's war dead, including 14 Class A war criminals. The Foreign Ministry said in a statement on Sunday that the government expresses deep disappointment and regret that Japanese leaders continued ritual offerings or visits to the shrine that beautifies Japan's war of aggression in the past and honors war criminals.
We'll leave it there for our news briefing today. Thank you for those updates.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
There are encouraging signs that South Korea is about to turn a significant corner with the COVID-19 pandemic. It was reported on Monday that the daily new COVID-19 case count stayed under 2,000 for the 10th day in a row for the first time in over 2 months. More than 90% of the adult population has at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and a new set of eased social distancing rules have come into effect, with authorities expecting that it can introduce a phased return to normal life from 2 weeks' time. To get an overview of the current situation and how health authorities are planning ahead, we have joining us on the line now Dr. Brian Kim, an epidemiologist from the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency, which heads the nation's virus management system. Dr. Kim, hello. It's great to have you on the show again.
Thank you for having me.
First off, South Korea reported only 1,050 additional coronavirus cases on Monday, the lowest since the fourth wave of the pandemic started in early July. Dr. Kim, do you think this latest wave has now passed its peak?
Yes. As we mentioned, we now have relatively stable number of newly confirmed cases for the last couple of weeks. And it's mainly due to rapidly rising vaccination rates. But it's been early to say that we saw the peak of the spread of COVID-19 at this point. And the main reason is that as we are expecting the ease of overall social distancing measure, starting from November, and also we are stepping into winter seasons, and we may need more time to see whether we could see the stable decline over the spread for the next coming months.
Right, so the KDCA is still remaining cautious. You mentioned the encouraging vaccination rates. The KDCA on Monday revealed that over 40 million people, or 78.7% of the country's population, have received their first shots of COVID-19 vaccines. The number of fully vaccinated people stood at over 33 million, or 64.6%. But the speed of vaccinations, especially for first dose vaccinations, has dropped significantly. However, that could pick up again starting today as South Korea began inoculations for children aged 16 to 17. And then in November, children aged 12 to 15 will be eligible to get vaccinated. How important is it to try and get more of the population vaccinated to continue to curb the spread of the virus?
Yes, actually, we were relatively late in terms of securing the supply of vaccination in the early stage, which was around last spring and summer. But once we somehow stabilized the supply of vaccines through various ports, the vaccination rate, as you mentioned, has been rapidly increased. And the more we get vaccinated, the lesser we have chance to be infected. So vaccination is one of the most critical factor in terms of preventing the spread of the virus and also reducing the probability of development into severe diseases and fatal cases. And this speedy vaccination was thanks to dedicated health workers and government workers, and especially for all those people who participated in this vaccination. And because of this joint effort, we now reached high number of vaccination rates.
Is hopefully soon we'll be able to pass the 80% of the population being vaccinated with their first dose soon. Despite vaccinations for teens starting now, though, there are still parents who remain worried about the side effects of the vaccine. Currently, the reservation rate for 16 to 17-year-olds, I understand, is only at about 55%. What message would you have to parents who are still concerned?
Yes, for vaccination for those age groups, 16 to 17 and also 12 to 15, can be done based on voluntary basis with the agreement of their parents or caregivers. And Pfizer vaccine is currently being used for this age group. And vaccination for this young age group is recommended for children with high risk groups that includes diabetes or obesity or cardiovascular disease or chronic respiratory diseases. But still, the risk of infection and subsequent complications far outweighs the risk of side effects such as myositis or myocarditis due to vaccination. And when you actually compare the numbers, it's about 100 times difference between the risk of infection and the risk of side effects due to vaccination. So my key message is it is very important to get vaccinated, and the risk of severe diseases due to vaccination is very low at this point, and majority of them were well treated and recovered without having serious diseases.
So the possible health risks from getting COVID-19 far outweighs any concerns about side effects, you're saying, for now. Vaccinations for children aged 12 to 15 will begin in November, as we said. Does the government have any plans to lower the vaccination age further than that?
Actually, we are closely monitoring the new scientific evidences as well as the major countries' decision in this matter. And once we clearly see the benefits in this young age group, the age limit will be lowered. But at this time, I cannot tell how long it's going to take.
What about for pregnant women? Vaccinations started today for pregnant women as well. But I understand the concerns among pregnant women is even higher, with less than 2% of those eligible having made reservations so far. What is the government's advice for pregnant women?
A vaccination for pregnant women is also being processed on a voluntary basis. And now we are recommending the vaccination, especially for those who have underlying conditions and those who are less than 12 weeks of their pregnancy and those who are older than 35 years old. There were studies on the safety of vaccination during the pregnancy, and then no major side effects compared to other people have been reported in the pregnant woman so far. And that's why many countries started vaccination for pregnant women, and we are also in line with that kind of approaches.
Right. So once again, the health risks from getting COVID-19 while pregnant outweighs any concerns about side effects from the vaccines. Meanwhile, the latest social distancing regulations went into effect today, Monday. The Greater Capital Region remains under level 4 social distancing, but now up to 8 people allowed to gather at multipurpose facilities at all times. But that has to include at least 4 fully vaccinated individuals. Regions elsewhere are under level 3, and up to 10 are allowed to gather, including 6 fully vaccinated people. Restaurants and coffee shops under level 3 will also be allowed to operate until midnight. So, Dr. Kim, what was the thinking behind these changes?
Yes, the main reason for these new changes and in terms of social distancing regulations is to reduce the burden of the small retailers and also to encourage the vaccination by providing some benefits for those who are fully vaccinated. And Social Distancing Measure Committee also agreed on these interim measures as we are expecting the with corona policy from this November. But we are very eager to make sure that the transition to this new policy happens in gradual phase.
So gradual phase. Authorities said the upcoming 2-week period will serve as a stepping stone towards the transition into the so-called with COVID-19 system of gradually normalizing socio-economic activities early next month. What are some of the risks that could perhaps delay this transition? What do we need to look out for?
I think the major risk at this point would be a surge of new cases and subsequent increased number of severe or fatal cases. But still, the social distancing measures have been maintained for such a long period, and we can no longer keep this way. And even if we see another surge due to eased measures in the next couple of weeks, the transition to the with corona policy will not be delayed, as we already reached the high vaccination rate. And even if we see some of the surge in terms of number of newly confirmed cases, I don't think it's going to be a very high number of severe or fatal cases because of the high vaccination rate.
Right. So even if there is a slight increase in the number of cases, it's the government is looking more at the number of serious cases and deaths as they make this transition. The Korean government launched a committee last week to assist this transition into the new COVID management system. The committee is expected to draw up a roadmap for the transition to normal life by the end of this month. Could you give us any details about how the preparations for the transition are coming along? What can people start to expect?
Yes, the committee was actually established on October 13th and to support transition to the coronavirus-19 policy. And this committee actually composed of the 40 members, including 8 government members and 30 private members, and Prime Minister, as well as private experts, actually is leading this committee. And this committee composed of 4 sectors: economy, society and culture, autonomy and safety, and prevention and medical sector. And this committee announced basically 3 basic principles: gradual, encompassing, and with people approaches during these transitions. And as you mentioned, roadmap is under consideration.
What kind of things can people expect? Are we talking about vaccine passes? What's going to happen with masks?
Yeah, actually, the vaccine pass is also under consideration. And actually, it has been used in many other countries, including UK or Germany. And main principle of vaccine pass is allowing more social activities for those who are fully vaccinated because they are more safe and they are less likely to spread once they get infected. But at this point, a lot of things are still under consideration, and we need more discussion with various stakeholders and various many other people. So once we finalize the final outcomes, we'll be able to share more details later.
And at least for now, masks remain a must, right?
Yes, yeah.
Well, the transition is coming, but it seems the message is we shouldn't expect things to completely go back to normal right away, and we should expect a gradual easing of restrictions. The public still, of course, has a responsibility to be careful, get vaccinated, and continue to wear masks for now. But the light at the end of the tunnel seems to be getting brighter now. Dr. Kim, we'll leave it there. We appreciate you making the time to speak to us once again. Thank you for connecting with us today and for all the hard work you and your colleagues at the KDCA have been doing for over the past year and 10 months or so.
Thank you for your time again. It is my great pleasure, as always.
That was Dr. Brian Kim from the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index dropped 8.38 points or 0.28% on Monday, closing the day at 3,006.68. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ rose, however, gaining 3.32 points or 0.34% to close at 993.86. On the foreign exchange, local currency weakened 5.2 won against the dollar, ending the day at 1,187.6 won. You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
It's time now for our daily segment, Korea Trending. This is where we take a look at some of the other news stories and headlines that have been trending online in Korea today. And for that, we have joining us in the studio now, Walter Lee, one of our regular contributors for this segment. Walter, hello. It's great to see you again.
Hello, Jung-ho. How are you today?
So, Walter, what topics have you brought for us today?
Okay, we first talk about a freak accident that resulted in the death of a patient after an oxygen tank violently shot into an MRI scanner. We then learn about the court laying down the law on a man convicted of a hit and run on a little girl. And finally, we'll delve into this year's Korea International Art Fair, or KIAF, being a resounding success in more ways than one.
Okay, so we start with a story about a terrible and tragic accident at a hospital. Walter, can you tell us more?
Yes, so a horrific accident that took place at a hospital in Gimhae, South Gyeongsang Province, when an oxygen tank got sucked into an MRI scanner, killing the patient inside. MRI is a medical imaging technique that is uses a powerful magnetic field and computer-generated radio waves to create detailed images of the organs and tissues inside the body.
Okay, so Walter, how did this, as you said, horrific accident happen exactly?
Okay, so on October 14th at around 8:30 p.m., a 60-year-old patient was preparing to undergo an MRI exam when the machine's powerful magnetic field sucked in an oxygen tank and carry cart that was placed around 2 meters away. According to the police, as the tank and carry cart shot into the narrow space that the patient was in, it collided with their head. What made matters worse is that the incredibly powerful magnetic pull kept the tank and cart inside, crushing the patient. The oxygen tank was said to weigh over 10 kilograms and about 1.3 meters, which is over 4 feet tall.
Mm. This is a rather astounding incident. Have we heard anything from the hospital about what happened?
Yes, so the hospital staff explained to KBS the patient was in fact in critical condition and required the oxygen tank, which is why it was brought into the MRI room. However, police said there was no CCTV set up in the MRI room and said an autopsy will be conducted to investigate the exact circumstances of the accident and whether the medical staff was negligent. Park Bom-jin, a professor at Korea University and public relations director of the Korea Society of Radiology, gave his expert analysis in an interview with a media outlet. He said that though there have been past incidences where dangerous objects like scissors were sucked right out of the medical staff's gown, this is the first case that an oxygen tank was launched across a room that ended in the death of a patient.
Right. I mean, for medical professionals not to have considered that the dangers of having a metal oxygen tank in an MRI machine is rather quite baffling. It sounds like a thorough investigation into whether it was indeed negligence that led to this incident needs to be carried out. Mm. Okay, let's move on to our next story now. What do you have for us?
So our next story centers around a man in his 50s who had a hit and run on a six-year-old girl while driving an apartment complex and fled the scene after only providing his apartment building number. The court ruled on Sunday that the 52-year-old who had been indicted on charges of hit and run has been found guilty and fined 5 million won.
Okay, so can you give us more details about the incident and what happened?
Yes, so the man was driving on the road within an apartment complex located in Yeonsu District in Incheon around noon on October 16th when he hit a six-year-old girl. The girl had been riding a bike and sustained injuries on her leg that would require over a month to recover. During the hearing, the driver said that the girl suddenly jumped out on the road and that he left the injured girl in the care of his older sister, adding that he had not intended to flee.
Okay, so although he said he didn't intend to flee, understand that he only told the sister about his apartment building number, not his actual apartment number. So what did the court say to his plea?
Well, the court ruled that the man leaving the scene without his personal details was enough to acknowledge his intention to flee from responsibility. Mm. The judge said that despite the victim addressing that she was in pain, the man had only given his apartment building number without providing any other detail and left the victim in the care of her older sister, who was only in the fifth grade, recognizing the man's negligence and intent to flee. The judge also took into consideration the fact that the injuries inflicted on the victim were not light and that the man had previously committed traffic offences.
Well, thankfully, the accident didn't leave any life-threatening injuries on the girl, and the driver, despite not leaving sufficient details, was found eventually. Mm. Okay, let's turn to our final story now. What are we looking at?
Yes, so the Korean International Art Fair, or KIAF 2021, South Korea's largest international art fair, has achieved an unprecedented boom, breaking multiple records since being inaugurated 20 years ago. This is said to be the result of the MZ generation taking more of an interest in art. KIAF Seoul 2021 recorded the highest sales ever, as well as the largest number of visitors this year.
Okay, when we say MZ generation, we of course mean a combination of millennials and Gen Zers, in other words, the relatively younger population. So record sales and record visitors, which is pretty incredible, as I understand that the festival actually had limits on the number of visitors that could attend due to the COVID-19 pandemic restrictions as well. How many visitors were there this year exactly?
Well, the organiser, the Galleries Association of Korea, said KIAF Seoul 2021, which opened physically on October 13th for the first time in 2 years due to the pandemic, had over 88,000 visitors over its five-day run at the COEX Center's A and B halls. It was an increase of over 7% compared to previous in-person events in 2019, and a remarkable achievement considering that there was a limit of up to only 3,063 people indoors at one time due to social distancing rules.
Wow, so there must have been quite a lot of people lining up each day, it seems then. And as we said, record sales. Can you tell us more about that too, Walter?
Sure thing. So the association announced it recorded 65 billion won, almost 55 million US dollars in sales, and that 50% of the sales came on opening day, which was set for the festival's VIPs. BTS's V and RM, along with other celebrities such as Chun Ji-hyun and Lee Byung-hun, were also spotted browsing through the artworks. Some 170 domestic and overseas galleries have participated in this year's KIAF Seoul.
Okay, so some big celebrity names in attendance as well, which I'm sure would have helped with the publicity. But it seems anyway that the local art scene is indeed continuing to grow. We'll wrap it up there for Korea Trending. Thank you for bringing us those stories, Walter, and we'll see you again later this week.
See you later.
Welcome back. It's now time for our weekly update on the latest Korean sporting action. It is a Monday Sports Roundup, and of course we cannot do that without the help of our regular expert contributor, sports journalist Yoo Ji-ho from the Yonhap News Agency. Ji-ho, hello. It's great to speak to you again.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. Hope you had a good weekend. So we start once again this week with the captain of the Korean national football team, Son Heung-min, who returned to the English Premier League after the international break and helped his team, Tottenham Hotspur, to a 3-2 victory over Newcastle United on Sunday, scoring a goal. It also, though, brought an end to a rather bizarre week where there were rumours that he'd tested positive for COVID-19 and it wasn't clear whether he was going to be available for the game. So, Ji-ho, can you tell us about the game and how these rumours about a positive COVID test for Son started?
Yeah, sure. Well, first with the match. First, Son Heung-min getting set up by Harry Kane for his team leading fourth goal of the season. So this came after an unexpected stoppage in play after a fan suffered an apparent heart attack at St. James Park in Newcastle. So when they came back, just soon after the players returned to action, Kane set up Son for the 35th time. The two have connected for a goal. That's one shy of a record in the Premier League held by Frank Lampard and Didier Drogba from Chelsea days. Over the weekend, though, there were some reports out of England that claim that Son Heung-min was one of two Tottenham players to have tested positive for COVID-19 after returning from international duty. Spurs kept silent until the last minute. They said two players returned false positive tests, but they did not disclose who those two players were because of medical confidentiality. So I guess it will forever remain a mystery. Maybe we'll never find out officially anyway who those players were. And obviously this is a very sensitive, you know, privacy issue there. So, you know, a lot of the reports that came out, I don't know how much we could trust them really. I mean, Son Heung-min, for what it's worth, he had tested negative twice in Iran while with the national team before rejoining Tottenham. So there's that. Again, I guess we'll never find out exactly who those players were or whether Son had indeed tested positive, and it turned out to be a false positive.
Yeah, thankfully, he is okay. It was just maybe a scare. He has another goal under his belt as well. I'm not really sure what to take away from all this, but at least it all seems to have ended well. Okay, continuing on, but sticking with football, we haven't talked much about the K-League and how Korean teams have been doing in the AFC Champions League lately. But while we weren't looking, two K-League teams have made it to the semi-finals now, and they'll face each other this week, meaning that there will be a Korean team in the final once again, no matter what happens. The two teams are the defending champions Ulsan Hyundai FC and three-time champions Pohang Steelers. They'll be facing off on Wednesday night. Can you set up that match for us, Jewel?
Yeah, 7 p.m. kickoff Wednesday down at Jeonju World Cup Stadium. You know, this is actually home of Jeonbuk Hyundai Motors, the another K-League club. But Jeonbuk actually lost to Ulsan 3-2 in the quarterfinals on Sunday, with Lee Dong-kyung scoring a wonder goal in extra time for their hard-fought win for Ulsan. So they're moving on to the semifinals, trying to win their second straight title. Pohang, in the meantime, knocking off Nagoya Grampus 3-0. They lost to the same Japanese club by the exact same score during group stage, but got their revenge when it mattered the most in the knockouts, with Im Sang-hyup grabbing a brace in the very convincing victory. So East Coast rivals, they call it the East Coast Derby in the K-League whenever Pohang and Ulsan score off. Now they're going to be playing each other with a ticket to the championship final at stake. Just on paper, I think Ulsan will be the heavy favorites in this one. They've got more firepower, superior depth up and down the roster, and they're not going for a treble. They're currently leading the K-League 1 by 1 point over Jeonbuk. They haven't reached the semifinals in the FA Cup in Korea. That's going to be October 27th. And obviously with the AFC League title still within sight, now two victories away from defending their championship there.
Right, that means a historic treble is still in the running for Ulsan. Jiho, do you think they have the legs to win all three?
I think they have enough bodies to do it. There's a lot of matches, right? They're playing Wednesday. They have the FA Cup semifinals coming up in a couple of weeks. And obviously the K-League is kind of going down the wire now. Just a 1 point lead over Jeonbuk. But I do think that they have the talent to do it. And, coming up short in the K-League the last two years behind Jeonbuk, I think that has really hardened these players. And I really believe they're going to pull it off. And no Korean team has ever done it in treble. And this might be, we might be in for a historic season this year.
Well, the first hurdle for that treble is against Pohang once again, kicking off on Wednesday, 7 p.m. Korea time. Okay, and meanwhile, with no Korean players left in the Major League Baseball postseason, our attention is now turning to the nail-biting end of the KBO regular season here in Korea as it heads towards the finish line. Now, as we come now to the penultimate week, the battle for first place got a little bit more interesting over the weekend, while the race for the wild card position is also heating up. First, Jiho, how do things look towards the top of the table?
Well, it's getting a little too tight for comfort for the K2Wiz. They're still in the lead in first place, but the Samsung Lions are brooding down their neck just 1.5 games back after the Lions defeated the Kiwoom Heroes 6-3 last night for their third straight win. The starting pitcher David Buchanan won his league-leading 16th game. That's a franchise record by a foreign pitcher. And the Wiz and the Lions will play each other twice on Friday and Saturday. Now, Edge Twins in third place, they're only 2.5 games out after sweeping the doubleheader against the NC Dinos by the scores of 11-1 and then 1-0. Now, the Wiz lost to last place Hanwha Eagles 2-1. So they've got four wins in their last 10. The Lions have won seven times in their last 10. And looking at the wildcard race, the fourth place Bears is sputtering a little bit of late. They're six games back of third place. So, I think they're going to try to just hold on to the spot rather than trying to crack the top three. The pennant most likely will come down to the Wiz, Lions, and the Twins. And, of the three, the Twins have the most games remaining with 12. The Lions have only seven games left. The Wiz have 10 games to go. So Twins have, 2.5 games out, but 12 games, two more games than Wiz. They've got a great shot as well.
Right. In your opinion, who's looking good? Who would your proverbial money be on for the pennant race?
It's too hard to tell. The Lions look good right now. They've got them pitching going. The Wiz, I'm a little surprised that they've been struggling of late. They're a little better team than this. And LG Twins, they've been up and down all year. I'm not going to be surprised if they end up just finishing in third place after all this. So I think it's going to come down to the Lions and the Wiz. Right now, it's too close to call for me.
And as we mentioned, there is another battle going on for the wild card slot. Three clubs are separated by just one game there. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, sure. The Landers, SSU Landers, holding down the spot for now. The Heroes having dropped three in a row to slip to sixth place. And the NC Dinos, the defending champions, they're in a virtual tie with the Heroes, just a decimal point behind them in the winning percentage. So the Landers and Heroes both have 9 games left. Dinos have 12 games to go. So, you know, also another development that's noteworthy this week is these tight races are happening just as the fans in Garita Seoul area are about to return to seats. The government has loosened restrictions on attendance at sporting events in and around Seoul. So now there's going to be 30% capacity crowds at outdoor sports games, provided that these fans are fully vaccinated. And indoor venues, there will be 20% cap. So, and they will be just like the rest of the country. So teams like the Twins and the Bears, Heroes, Landers, and of course the league-leading KT Wiz, they will have fans in the seats coming down the stretch.
Right, so welcome return of fans in this whole metro area. Just as the season is nearing its peak, who do you think will make it for the wildcard slot? Or maybe I should say, who would you like to see make it for the wildcard slot, Gio?
Well, you know, I don't really have any rooting interest, so I don't really have any dog in this fight.
who's impressed you this year?
Who
do you think will be fun in the final race, in the postseason?
I think SSU Landers will be fun. They've got a new ownership, right? Different look. They've got Chu Shin-soo here for the first time. It would be nice to see him play in the postseason in his first year in Korea. So there's my bet there.
Yes, we'll maybe take another look at where the teams stand next week. That's all for our Monday Sports Roundup. Jiho, thank you for those updates as usual, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Okay, thanks for having me today.
You're now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio. If you ever miss an episode of Korea 24, you can always catch up by downloading our podcast. Simply search for the KBS World Radio app wherever you get your applications from. After downloading the app, select the menu icon in the top left-hand corner. A drop-down menu will then appear from where you can select Podcasts, then Programs, then Korea 24. There, you'll find a list of all our previous episodes for you to download and enjoy on your own time. And don't forget to follow our Twitter page, at KBS Korea 24, to get the latest updates on our show every day.
We finish up, as usual, with our closing segment, Morning Edition Preview, looking at some interesting features or reports are coming out in tomorrow's editions of the Korea Times and the Korea Herald newspapers. Thanks goes out to them for providing us with early editions to make this segment possible. Now, our staff editor, Mark Wilson Chair, has been looking through those papers, and he has joined us now in the studio. Mark, hello. It's great to see you.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. So what do you have for us?
So, Jongho, this first topic, it made me laugh because it actually came up in a real conversation during lunch today. Myself and my colleagues, we were wondering what this recent travel bubble agreement between South Korea and Singapore entailed. And the Korea Herald's Kim Hye-yeon writes all about the agreement signed on October 8th. So, starting November 15th, those who are fully vaccinated against COVID-19 can travel freely between the two countries without needing to quarantine. Their COVID-19 vaccination certificates will also be mutually recognized. So, great stuff.
Yeah, so if you have been fully vaccinated and passed the two-week period after that, then you can start traveling from November 15th. This is great news for both sides, as I'm sure people are looking forward to traveling recreationally again. But Seoul and Singapore are also both international business hubs as well. I'm sure business travelers and the names they represent are looking forward to that as well.
I mean, think about the no quarantine period, right? So in-person meetings and face-to-face business deals, they're coming back, which is really great. A lawyer from a local corporation told the Herald that it was really, really hard to rely on major business deals through just video conferencing only, right? He said it's been also a whole 2 years since he's been to Singapore, so he's actually just really looking forward to experiencing Singapore firsthand, right, and how much it's changed. Also, a current affairs and documentary show producer told the Herald that they were looking forward to doing a lot more documentary content with neighboring countries. Travel shows. I mean, that's great that they're coming back too. I mean, real live travel shows. So there you have it. To learn more about the South Korea-Singapore travel bubble agreement, pick up tomorrow's Herald.
Yeah, I can imagine a whole host of shows and programs making exchanges with Singapore will be popping up.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't mind a quick trip to Singapore myself as well, but I feel like
you got to be here, Jungle. You have to work.
I've got to be here first, and I think the planes and hotels are probably booking up fast as well.
Already. That's
I
very
can imagine
true.
The demand will be very high for that. Okay, let's move on to our second story. What do you have for us?
So, Jango, I know you're a fan of French cuisine, and so I know you'll like Kwan Miyu's piece in tomorrow's Korea Times. Before we move on, I just want to apologize ahead of time for my French pronunciation, and I want to apologize to our producer, who can speak French well, and also to our French KBS World team, so apologies. But Kwan writes about the sixth edition of the Goûte de France, a.k.a. Good France, but also it translates to Taste of France. That makes a lot more sense to me. It's an international initiative to promote French cuisine that kicked off last Thursday, and it centers on the culinary heritage and specialty of the Center Loire Valley region. Kwan writes that the several French restaurants in South Korea will offer a special menu on the Center Loire Valley, and online events will also be held to complement the festival.
Yes, Goûte de France,
I think. Goûte de France. apologies.
So when you talk about the Loire Valley as well, wine, I'm sure, will be on the menu. I understand this festival has been around since 2018, focusing on different regions each year, right?
That's absolutely correct. Each year, the festival showcases the produce from a particular region, as you said, but also the food culture from said region. French ambassador to Korea, Philippe Lefort, told the Times that the Center Loire Valley may not be very well known in South Korea, but it has a very long culinary history on the Loire River, the longest river in France, and also for the castles as well. Mm. What kinds of foods are well known in the region? Well, there's a wide range of wine, as you said. It's also very famous for goat cheese. Then, there's the French-style apple pie, Tarte Tatin, which originated from the Tatin sisters, who ran a hotel in the region. Kwan also talks about how that was essentially made by mistake, so it's a really fun article. To delve deeper into French gastronomy, and also just become really hungry after looking at those images, pick up tomorrow's Times.
I mean, just talking about it and thinking about it is making my mouth water and my stomach grumble. Definitely want to check out tomorrow. That is where I'll leave it for Morning Edition Preview. Thank you for those stories, Mark, and we'll talk again next time.
Talk to you then.
And that's where we leave it for our show today as well. Before we go, we have a quick notice for shortwave listeners in India. With the beginning of the fall winter B20 season at 0100 UTC or 1000 KST, October 31st, 2021, KBS World Radio English Service will broadcast at 1400 to 1600 UTC on 9630 kHz instead of 9785. We hope the new frequency will better serve our listeners in the target area. Meanwhile, you can also listen to Korea 24 and all our KBS World Radio programs on our apps, KBS Kong, KBS World Radio, and KBS World Radio On Air. And you can catch up on any previous episodes of Korea 24 by downloading our show as a podcast, which you can also find on our website, as well as popular podcast apps, including Naver Audio Clip. And that's where we close out our show for today. Tomorrow, we have, along with our regular news updates and analysis, our special interview segment, Touch Base in Seoul, where we'll be speaking to another special guest for that. So do join us again then. In the meantime, we hope you have a great day. I've been your host, Kwon Chang-ho, and thank you, as always, for listening. Goodbye.
Thank you.